This is CliffCentral.com.
This show contains adult content. If you find it offensive, please go to the CliffCentral.com website where there's a show for you.
Minutes past 10 on Friday morning. This is CliffCentral.com unscripted on radio. And this morning, most definitely uncensored sex talk with Jonty Sewell and a whole bunch of really beautiful and smart people. Morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Jonty, and the beautiful lady sitting next to me today.
Absolutely. So, morning, Misha.
Morning.
So, Misha's here as a transplant.
What?
We kidnapped you.
We kidnapped her from another
That's
show.
That's it. And we're not allowing you to go back. Nobody wants to go back to other shows after
they've
been
don't.
Here.
See, the thing is, I can never operate without a beautiful woman by my side. And seeing as Tamar is not here, you are her replacement now.
Oh. I would take offense to being somebody's replacement, actually.
You are her upgrade. You are her upgrade. Sorry, I said the word wrong.
I wouldn't necessarily say upgrade.
I hope Tamar's not listening. Tamar, I still love you.
And Anastasia.
Yeah, you got me back.
Yes.
I didn't scare you off well enough last time.
No. You gotta go a long way to scare us off.
I'm trying.
Listen, if you work in the field of sexuality, you realize that you need to develop a very thick skin. Very quickly.
So my skin's gotten very, very thick, eh?
Yeah. So that means you just, when you bring out the paddles and the crops and the floggers, you
doesn't
need to
hurt
hit
as much.
A whole lot harder and a whole lot more. So,
do we have a flogger today?
We don't.
Damn it.
It's next door. We can get
it. We should go get it.
So, tomorrow, I hope you're listening. We miss you and we say hi. We hope you're having a cool time with your family.
Hi. Hey.
So, let us begin with this.
Ninja sex. Chocolate starfish. Twitter bag. Calipagian.
Today's dirty dictionary word is...
Feminal. F-E-M-A-N-A-L.
Dirty dictionary word.
Any idea?
I'm just trying to put two words together, so feminism and... anal. I think I'm going in the wrong direction, though.
I told you she's not as innocent as she looks.
Really.
Anastasia.
Why is everyone staring at me like that?
Because we're waiting for you to give us your version.
There's definitely something backdoor going on there.
Yeah. Okay.
And women are involved, and I'm going to plead the fifth.
Okay. So we're on the right track. There's no question of that. That's impressive, my word. Okay.
So we've got a smarty bunch here today.
Absolutely. So let us, we'll come back to that one.
So get in touch with us on 086, I've forgotten the number now.
0861.
189555.
No, the other way around.
God.
Oh my God. Lisa,
let me try this again.
Start this again without the medication this time.
0861-555-189 or contact. There we go. Okay. There we go. Or just go to our Cliff Central page, please. Get the number there if I screwed it up. You can contact us on WeChat as well. I can't hear myself anymore. Okay. You can contact us on WeChat, message to screen, or just go to our Twitter page, Eros Life SA, at Lisa Lesbian and at CliffCentral.com.
And that's where we will be.
And that's the proper real details.
There we go. So I think everybody outside is wanting to know what drugs you're on because they want to share them too.
It's the good stuff,
It's the good stuff, yes. So it's been a fascinating week. We did one of the most beautiful and deep water massages we have ever. It's time to get your butt into the water massage pool.
I know, hey. I actually, you know what, we've been wrapping up Sexpo, and officially from yesterday, I am now Sexpo free and everything else free. So, literally everything else free. So, John, to the next one, I'm definitely going to
be there. So next one is 10th of November.
Fantastic. I'm putting it in my diary now.
There we go.
Beautiful. Mishka's going to join Anastasia as well. Yeah, sure.
Can you wear a bathing suit?
No.
Oh, okay.
Everybody else is allowed to accept you.
Everybody else except you.
That's okay.
I wonder why.
I don't wonder why.
Yes, they are fabulous. Remember, when you're on air, people can't see you touching your boobs.
Sorry, yeah. So they are, in fact, real, for anyone who was wondering. I found in my...
You need to put your mouth close to the microphone. You've done this before now.
No, she's never been on air, though. She's normally just taking photos of the fashion people.
Duncan is saying very rude things in my ears here.
Duncan, shame on you. She's very innocent. Leave her alone.
That's what she keeps saying.
I know. She keeps. But she doesn't look innocent to me. Hey? It's the innocent ones that are normally not.
I think innocence is a very relative concept.
You do?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
It's a very exciting concept.
It is.
I don't know if it's exciting.
It's exciting for like 10 minutes. Then it gets boring.
The idea of it is exciting, and then it's like, okay, well, you know, actually come back when you've got some experience.
Yeah. The idea.
So I'll be back in a couple weeks' time.
Okay. The idea of a lot of sexual things are very exciting, rather than the actual practice or experience thereof.
A little bit anticlimactic, maybe.
Yeah, and we say that about a lot of fantasies, because when people come and talk about exploring fantasies, and I say a lot of fantasies should be left as fantasy. Because the reality is never going to come close.
Oh, absolutely. And if you're getting some degree of fulfillment from that fantasy, you really have to ask yourself, do I want to jeopardize this? Is it worth the risk, the reward ratio? Is there going to be that payoff?
Because you think of often how specific fantasies are. And you ask somebody to say something about that, it is not going to happen. Or to say something in that way, and they're going to laugh at you.
Yeah, I suppose there's often this kind of internal concept, the script, that everything has to go according to plan. Yeah. And, I mean, that just takes away all of that spontaneity from interactions.
Yeah. But the other side of it is, and this is something that we started doing a little bit of, where people come to us and they tell us their fantasy, and we actually set it up and make it happen. And once people are kind of there and have gotten to the point where, yes, this is something we really want to do, the expression and the experience of it is mind-blowing. But you need to be so specific, and you need to get so many details to be able to make it really, really good. So let us leave fantasy for a little while, and let us go to where we are going this morning, which is this huge minefield that impacts on probably every single one of us at some point in our lives, and has enormous impact on the way that we accept and like and love ourselves, and huge impact on our relationships and on the pleasure we will allow in that body image. Which is kind of a continuation of what we were talking about last week, and we wanted to come to it last week and we didn't. So it's very cool that we have the opportunity to expand this. And it's something that impacts on us from the time that we are small. And we get so much of it, particularly from the media. That's the hugest thing of what you should look like, of what you should be like, of what you should be doing, what you should be having, and how much pleasure you should be having, and whatever Cosmo tells you. And by the way, there was a study done a while ago of which magazines give the worst sex advice in the world. Guess what was top
Cosmopolitan.
Yes.
Oh, God. Those 10 tips on how to keep a man. Yeah. 20 tips on how to make a woman orgasm. I've tried them. It don't work.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and it's the same tips every single time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, to be honest, I mean, my mother, when she was my age, read the Cosmo, and she says it's the exact same thing. They've just been recycling. Like
different pictures, different woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, and kind of upgrading the language a little bit, but saying the same thing. Yeah.
You know, John, it's so important what you're saying. I was reading an article, or actually a friend posted something on Facebook this week. There's a very famous plus-size model, and she's absolutely exquisite. She's beautiful. Sorry, her name evades me now. I'll put it on Twitter later with the article.
That's a funny name, evades me.
You're funny today, hey? Anyway, and he made a comment and he said that he doesn't mean to be rude, but he finds it quite offensive that she's trying to promote plus size, and says that basically what she's doing is promoting obesity. And I find that quite offensive because, I mean, we're getting to a place where people are talking more about body image and what body image is to them. And, you know, moving away from the stereotypical beautiful size 6 woman in magazines, because, I mean, if your kids see it, they want to be it, and they, you know, create all kind of, you know, eating disorders and that. And so I really think body image is something we always need to come back to. And we've done a few shows on this. It's very important. And I actually wanted to ask you your opinion. on plus size models and where you kind of see that in both the place of marketing and the world and where we are going right now.
Mm. It's interesting. And there was also, in line with that, there was a beautiful spread a little while ago that was all over the place on social media sites about yoga teachers that were big.
Oh, yeah.
And it was absolutely beautiful because, you know, the standard perception of yoga teachers is these really hot people with these amazing bodies. And these were really big women. But they could do the most phenomenal things with their bodies. That was no impediment. And it was awesome. So over the years, my experience has come to be this, that the sexiest, most sensual people are the people who are comfy with their bodies.
Exactly. That's so
and,
true.
And, you know, I spend a lot of time with very sexual people in some very sexual environments. The women who are freest, the women who are most powerful, are the women who are comfy with themselves. And these are the women... We're getting dunk all this really weird feedback in our ears here. That the women who are comfiest with themselves are not the most perfect bodies.
Yep.
They are actually women who are a little bit more curvaceous, who are a little bit rounder. But these are women who are comfy with who they are. And it's something that comes from inside, not the outside. So the general understanding is that the more physically beautiful someone is, often the more insecure because of that. It's such a challenging space to be in. So, you know, you look at the world of models and supermodels. There's always somebody younger. There's always somebody prettier. There's always somebody coming who's going to be better. And we try and do this instead of allowing ourselves to be who we are.
I mean, one of the most beautiful things to me is about a woman is when she is just – so comfortable with herself and her body. And I mean, you know what, I'm told a few weeks ago when we did the Nitra, I wasn't sure if I was comfortable with nudity as well, and we had that conversation. But it's just, it's incredible even walking at Sexpo and looking at the different women there. You know, some of them are bigger, some of them are smaller. And the more smaller ones with the more, you know, the six pack and the nice boobs and everything, yes, it's nice to look at. But what's really appealing and really is sexy is a woman that walks around and just has this confidence streaming out of her. It's just, there's just something incredibly sexy about that.
And that's an internal...
That's an internal
light. It has nothing to do with what the body looks
exactly.
like.
Exactly.
Well, I actually want to latch onto something there because you were talking about this perfect body. And, I mean, that's just representative of that kind of internalized idea that we all have, that as soon as someone is plus-sized or they're fat or they're whatever it is, suddenly that body becomes imperfect. And it means that we're measuring bodies against a standard. And it's a standard that firstly is, it's arbitrary. It is. Why is that beautiful? Because we've been told that it's beautiful. And I mean, you've proven it yourself by saying, well, you're looking at body types that are not regarded as conventionally beautiful. And you're finding beauty in them. So there is nothing there that is intrinsically less attractive.
And it's actually based on an incredibly small percentage of people in the world, because we compare that, for example, to the supermodels, who are an incredibly small percentage of people.
Well, it's absolutely right. And that's why I say it's a standard that's arbitrary and it's a standard that's not realistic. And quite frankly, it's a standard that is unhealthy. And to keep using that as our benchmark is really something that we need to try and get away from.
Absolutely. What do you think about all that?
Well, it's quite interesting. I mean, that you mentioned plus size models, because when I was younger and naive and all that nonsense, I considered going into modeling, and I was told that I would be considered a plus size model. Yeah, and so I'm not like overweight or anything, and I'm not, you know, scrawny and skinny and stuff. But it was shocking because I'm not a size 6, but I'm not a size 10 either. So that was very interesting to find out. But I've realized that also people are often their worst enemy, or their own worst enemy. So you see a picture of yourself and everyone's gushing over it, like, oh, that's such an amazing photo. But then you're like, yeah, but my one eye is, you know, half asleep and, you know, there's a bit of a bulge on that side. And so it's, you know, you often need to look past your own flaws in order to get that
kind of
confidence.
We're our own worst critics. Hey?
Yeah, we are. We are harsher on ourselves than anything else. You know, I look at my friends Kuhn and Bronn, who do these amazing, beautiful boudoir shoots. And when you're able to tap into the sensuality of someone, that's where you find the beauty. And that has nothing to do with what the body looks like. And regardless of that, you can feel so beautiful.
I think that there's this very important concept that's coming out here, and it just comes back to what's just been said. But I mean, really, we've got this idea of beauty, and it's you look at someone else and you find these attractive qualities in them, but their perception of themselves can differ. And I think acknowledging that kind of dichotomy is very, very important because definitely when it comes to addressing matters like body image and body positivity, we know that if someone is not feeling good about themselves, they're not feeling confident, they're not feeling comfortable in their own skin and happy with their body, saying to them, oh, but you're so thin, oh, but you're so pretty, oh, but you're this, oh, but you're that, I see it, why don't you see it? That's not helpful.
No.
It's really more about what's going on in that person's internal perception of themselves. And I think the problem is when we look at someone and say, oh, but that's nonsense, you're actually this and this and this. What I'm really saying to you is, your opinion is invalid. It doesn't count. It's not accurate. And I think that's probably one of the worst things that you can do to someone who's having those problems with body image. Yeah.
We do that to naturally kind of reassure somebody, but we don't see what's actually underneath that. And the same thing, you know, you buy a top and you think, and you ask somebody, well, does this top look good? And they say, yeah, it looks fantastic. Well, no matter what they think, if you like the top, wear the top.
Yeah, absolutely right. But that's really the thing. It's trying to turn that focus from what is attractive. And instead of, because I mean, the adage is beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And that's really completely the wrong perspective because it's in your own eye. It's in your mind's eye. It's how you perceive yourself.
And it's much more a feeling than a thought.
Well, absolutely right. And I think until we address it like that, we're really not tackling it properly because it really is unhelpful to say, oh, your body image is what's distorted. And actually, I see that you're very, very attractive. And it comes back to that idea of finding confidence and that kind of sensual security, if I can call it that.
Absolutely.
To be attractive, because those are people who don't have issues with their own body image. And I mean, obviously, there's a lot of adversity with that because when you do live in the society that tells you thin is beautiful and you have to be skinny and you have to be a size zero or a size 00 or whatever it is, that really eventually, after being subjected to it enough, it definitely starts to erode your own self-confidence.
Yeah, there's no question of it.
You know, that's such a complicated issue because, I mean, you know, very often I would compliment a woman on how she looks, and it doesn't come just from having the perfect body, having the perfect shape. It's like, really, you're so beautiful. You know, you look at someone and you go, wow, you're actually taking my breath away. You're so beautiful. And it's like, I don't know sometimes if I'm doing more harm by actually saying it out loud or not, because then the response would be, no, I'm not, and you're just saying that, and you don't mean it.
No, because you're expressing something for you that's really important. I was having a conversation with somebody this week who asked me about what I find beautiful, or what's my type. Or, that was the question, what's my type?
Don't we always get asked that question?
Yeah. And, you know, she's quite... She's,
did you say AB negative?
Something like that.
Yeah.
And I said...
I was going to say C36, but...
And that's said, not a type, that's something else.
And I said quite simply, women are my type. And there is something beautiful all the time.
Incredibly.
That's it. And sometimes it's just one feature. It's a look, it's a glance, it's a smell, it's a smile, it's a something. But if we're willing to be open to that, we can see so much beauty in so many ways. And the beauty is about us. So it's such a personal perception. But when we can open that space, we can allow, if somebody's willing, to step into the space of them being beautiful. And for me, in my work, so much of that comes through touch, through really beautiful experiences where somebody can feel beautiful because they can feel, they can allow a level of pleasure, a level of sensuality. That's not about sex.
That's so true.
But they can be touched in a way that has this incredible love that allows them to feel beautiful.
But Jonty, I think what you're saying really ties into the point that Lisa just made, and that is that kind of conditioning. If you say to someone, oh, you're so beautiful, or you compliment them, or something like that, there is almost that kind of conditioning where you can't acknowledge it and own it and say, oh, yes, I am. You know, it's socially correct to say,
this is what's wrong with me.
Yeah. But this is the problem, because you have that conditioning, I have to live up to these standards. And it really brings out that sort of very critical eye in yourself that we've already discussed a little bit to pick out the flaws. And if someone says, oh, you are stunning, then you're going to say, oh, but my ass is to this and my hands are to that and my nose is to this and all of these things. And you almost feel like it's a responsibility. I have to be aware of those flaws, that this is what's wrong with me, and I have to be open about it because I don't meet the standard. And that's the problem. And it does come back to what John T is saying, because once you can let go of that and actually acknowledge that, oh yes, I am beautiful, even if I don't fit these arbitrary standards, but I am beautiful despite that, and I'm allowed to feel beautiful. That's okay. Yep.
And the fact that somebody will connect with me, that somebody can love me, that I can allow that love, that's what's so beautiful. So here's an interesting question. Let's put this out here, and I'd love to hear. Instead of messaging us and telling us what you don't like about yourself and what you'd like to change, tell us what you do like about yourself. So here's an interesting, what do you like about yourself?
I would have to say my mind, to be honest. I mean, a lot of, you know, well, seeing as we're on the sex show, I think my second option would have to be these two.
these two pointing at boobs, by the way.
Yeah. Because I worked really hard on growing these puppies, okay? Like, you need to understand.
Yeah, you didn't have to do anything. They grew by themselves.
No, I put in the mental effort into growing
them. She was rubbing them every day.
Every
day. No, I'm picturing that. No, I'm not.
It's actually really funny. When I worked in a bar, I often got complimented on the assets, and one night I just got so fed up and I just said, thank you, I grew them myself. And the guy was so freaked out, like I think he left. But that's actually the highlight of my whole bartending career. But I would definitely have to say my favorite quality of myself is my mind. It's, you know, it's it's who I am. It makes me me.
Okay. What do you like about yourself?
It's so funny. I was going to say the exact same thing. I honestly, I've never considered myself to be a beautiful person, and not beautiful physically, not because of anything or because I think there's something wrong with me. But, you know, I think when I look at other women, I go, wow, you know, there's so many things about you that's beautiful that I actually don't have. So I've never considered or looked at myself as a sexual, sexy, well, sexual, yes, but not sexy being or someone that is really hot. So even when my girlfriend complimented me and said, oh God, you're so beautiful, it was, it's difficult for me to even swallow that pill because I'd never saw myself like that. But for me, it's always been my mind as well, because, you know, there's nothing I cannot achieve with my mind. Everything I set my mind to, I've been able to achieve. And it's kind of, I think, my tool. You know, some women use their breasts to get things, and some women use their smile and their physique, and I don't. The only thing that's ever really gotten me anywhere in life has been my mind. And I think that's the one thing that I can still work on and actually grow and change without having to physically enhance it as well. You know, so it really is my favorite part about me too.
What do you like about yourself?
That's a very interesting question, and I mean, I'm not going to run away with all of this and make everything about trans issues,
but
definitely I have a, I think it's a little bit of a unique perspective, at least in this particular setting. Definitely coming from a space where I used to be very uncomfortable with my body, and of course, in the early days, I didn't understand what it was that started, that bugged me with it. It was just always, I'm uncomfortable. And then once I understood and I could interpret that as being a manifestation of gender dysphoria, it started to become suddenly very specific. And one of the things that I always speak out very dramatically against is that idea that a trans narrative, a typical trans narrative, is, oh, you're an X trapped in a Y's body or something like that. And while it might be a very valid experience for a lot of people, it doesn't ring true for every single transgender person. And I think it's very important to understand. And my experience with that has been going on almost like a journey and moving from a position where I find all the flaws in my body and I fixate on them, and then watching and growing and developing and seeing how things change and my own image of myself, and coming into a space where I realize I'm not trapped in anyone else's body. This is my body. You know, this is, despite what I might have been assigned at birth, this is a woman's body. It's my body. It's my female body. And learning to come to terms with that And really, I mean, that's been one of the most shockingly startling differences in my disposition, was coming from having this absolute total lack of self-confidence and security in my skin to a point where, I don't know, you could say I'm pretty full of myself. I like everything. I look in the mirror and I'm gorgeous and attractive and beautiful, and I am starting to see the positives, even in areas that used to displease me. So I can't really give you a singular answer to that and say, oh, I like this and this and this. I like everything.
Can I just say that is the most beautiful and most powerful thing I've ever heard a woman say about herself.
I really want to take that to some very interesting places. So good morning, Cindy. Tell us what you like about yourself all the way in Ireland. Say good morning, Cindy, everybody.
Oh, hello, morning, Cindy. Is she on air? Cindy. We're like, is there a message or is there like a phone call? We're dying.
A message.
Where are you, Cindy?
Cindy's in Ireland.
Cindy's in Ireland. She always messages us. She's like one of our biggest fans, and she's brilliant. She messages all the shows. Yeah. So
there's something fascinating that you've said in terms of body image, and I want to take it to two different places. The first one is about ownership. And we're talking a little bit about this before we came on air, as to who actually owns your body. And what that comes to very much is our emotional connection with our genitals, our emotional connection with our sexuality. And when we talk about body image, we tend to look at a much bigger picture. And I want to focus on something a little bit more specific, is the body image that we have of our genitals. Because in our society, it's become a huge thing, particularly with women's genitals, men as well, but much more with women. This enormous expectation given by the porn industry of what you should look like, and this horrendous practice of vaginal plastic surgery and everything around that, that really touches something quite fascinating. But before we do that, we have to do something we haven't done for a few weeks because we've been really, really busy.
Story.
A real sex story. So normally what we would do is we'd put Misha on the spot and say, Misha.
Yes, let's do that. Don't worry. Her face is like, no, I'm running.
Okay.
No, it's like, no, so, my mom's listening to the show.
Mom, Misha's been very good. Yeah. She's been behaving.
Yeah. Still wearing all my clothes.
Not touching her boobs or anything like that.
Not yet. No, the first time that you're here, we are quite gentle because we want you to come back. We lull you into the sense of security. And
oh, my God, it works on me.
Yeah.
It did.
See,
you
what
came
happened?
Back. So today you're taking off your clothes. You see, it's the second day.
And after that, well, anything's game. So, it is almost 10:30, and let us do this.
You can watch porn, or you can just listen to the real sex stories.
Good morning. My story today is a bit of a self-love story. And I was at work one morning, and to set the scene, I share an office with about three other people. We all have our own desks, but we share a common area, and it is reasonably open. And on this morning, I'd been having quite a sexy group chat with one or two other people, a bit of phone sex without a phone call, just some sexy messages, some very sexy pictures, being told what they were going to do to me and what I was going to do to them. And I was getting extremely, extremely wet and horny sitting at my desk. And while reading these messages, the thought crossed my mind that maybe I need to touch myself a little bit, fulfill my needs at that point, because I was really just absolutely throbbing with desire. And without a chance to get up and go anywhere, I read one of the messages that said that they would love to pleasure me at my desk. So I put my hand on my inner thigh, pulled my skirt up just a very little bit so that I could stroke my legs, running my fingertips along the soft skin on the inside of my thighs, just silky smooth, imagining whose hand or whose fingers that could be. I then very discreetly, very softly pulled my hand further up my legs, further up my thighs, and gently started stroking the outside of my panties, which were very wet at this point. So, with one hand on my mouse and my other finger stroking my pussy, I started rubbing myself very gently, just circling my clit, just feeling the pressure and the sensation of the material rubbing against my skin. I then slipped my fingers underneath my panties, and as quietly and as discreetly as possible, started massaging myself, rubbing myself. I was so turned on at this point that it felt as if my clit was swollen and about to burst with pleasure. So it didn't take very much, just some gentle rubbing, slipping my finger into my pussy once or twice. And right there at my desk, I just completely released into an orgasm.
Wowee, that was hot. Roxy, thank you so much. So tell us what you thought of the real sex story. Tell us what Feminol is. Tell us what you like about yourself, about your body, about your sexuality, about your sensuality. Can we try this again, please? Join our conversation on. Message us on.
0861-555-189. And I promise you that is the correct number. I googled it. No, I remembered it this time. Okay, message us to screen on WeChat. And then you can also tweet us at ErosLifeSA, at Lisa the Lesbian, and also at Cliff Central Common. If you have not downloaded the application yet, go do it now.
That's it. So we've learned something from this about you.
About me?
Yeah, we've learned how to bring you into focus.
Yes, there we go.
There we go.
My focus has been all over the show lately, hey?
There we go. Somebody talking about playing with her pussy, you're there, you're happy.
Yes, there we go. Talk about pussy, wet panties, dropping, and there we go. All focus. Okay,
so we know exactly what
we have works. Also learned something about Anastasia.
Mm. Oh, did we?
We did. So we were briefly discussing writing a sex scene, and I believe there are some sex scenes in your book.
Yeah, there absolutely are.
And fantastic. And you're going to tell us some, right? Or going to like bring your book and read them to us if you don't want to.
Oh, yeah, definitely once the book drops. And the real point that I want to make there is that in writing the book, I understood I have to be very frank and very open, very honest about my experiences. And it does. It gives me a degree of vulnerability. But everything that's in there, it's important. And there's a reason that it's in there. And it's an experience that I had that I reflected on, that I found meaning in, and some of it was immediately apparent. Some of them I had to think about and really go back into detail and analyze how did that experience impact upon me. And I mean, obviously, you know, writing a sex scene in an autobiography or multiple sex scenes even, it's a very tricky position to be in because, I mean, you know that information, that writing, that scene is going to be in the hands of so many strangers. And
see, I fully get that in a way, because when I started my personal journey and went and had every experience that I could think of, and the question afterwards was, who am I after that? What was the impact on me? What has that done to me? And that was fascinating, and I didn't have a lot of people to talk to about them honestly and openly, and that was really interesting.
Yeah, well,
so did you obviously had to get permission from people to publish some of these stories.
I've changed all names to protect the innocent and to protect the not so innocent. Mm. And everyone who's in it pretty much knows that they're in it.
Okay, so here's my question, though. So you know when you have a sexual encounter with someone else, the way I remember it and the way they remember it is sometimes completely different.
Of course, because it was your encounter was yours and your experience was
yours. That's what unfortunately learned on air one day. But so did you have that experience that the way you remembered it and you – told it that someone else would have gone, or maybe someone else said to you, actually, it's kind of not how I remembered it, or have they not really read it yet to really give you that opinion?
Well, it's always a tricky thing, and I don't think it just necessarily applies to the sex scenes, mm-hmm. but, you know, definitely, anything, I mean, yeah. these are my experiences, these are my memoirs, and really what it's about, I always say it's not so much about the individual incident and what happened to me. It's about the effect that it had on me, and it's about the lens that I viewed that through. And I think it's really that matter of perspective that I wanted to bring across. It's not a history textbook. Mm-mm. That's not the purpose of it. It's really just to give you an idea of my experiences and how these seemingly mundane incidents impacted on me in ways that you wouldn't necessarily anticipate. Mm-mm. And I think that's really where that intimacy and that honesty comes from.
Mm-hmm. So Mike doesn't like repetitive sex stories, which I can understand, because they are very boring. And when you try and write about sex, you think about how many words can you actually use and how many times you're going to say these words. But that's a whole other story. And we did do a fantastic show a while ago. Go listen to the podcast on erotic writing. It is really cool.
That's it.
It is really cool. And it's something that we will come back to. Mm-mm. But let's go back to where we were before, which was this whole idea of ownership. And this is where I think so much of body image starts to shift, is where you start to own yourself. So here's my idea. My theory is that from the time we're really young, we become very separated from our genitals. Because every child spends lots of time with their hands in their pants. Because it's comforting. It's not so much about pleasure. And what do mommy and daddy say, Misha?
They say, take your hands out your pants, young lady. That's Although it. That wasn't really me.
You did that so well. Absolutely.
So if they just said that, it would actually be okay. But they say a whole lot more.
Yes.
Dirty, don't it's nasty, it's horrible, you're going to go blind, it's going to fall off, it's going to get hairy palms, absolutely all of those things. So we become separated from our genitals. Then we grow up, we hit puberty, boys and girls, and there's all this kind of guilt and shame and embarrassment and misinformation and myth and so many other weird stuff that happens. And I was sitting with a client this week, and she said when her mother told her and sat down and told her about sex, her mother was actually in tears about it. So that's the kind of relationship that we have. So what happens is our genitals become more and more separate from who we are. Then you start having sex and your pleasure actually becomes dependent on somebody else. And this impacts on women much more than on men. Because you're only a sexual being when you're having sex. You're only a sexual being when you're in a relationship. And your pleasure, your orgasms very often are dependent on somebody else giving you this pleasure, making you come, making you have these orgasms. When we start to reclaim that, to claim that for ourselves, that's when we start to free ourselves from those limitations. And that's when our body, our sexuality, our pleasure, our genitals becomes ours, not somebody else's. And one of the most important things in this, and it's so much part of the work that we do with women, and now seeing the importance of it with men, is establishing an emotional connection and relationship with our genitals. So this is the time where you guys say something.
Oh, we're supposed to speak. All right. I've been waiting for this. And I don't know if you saw me sitting in the corner and kissing and baring my claws and just getting ready to jump down your throat.
Yes,
but obviously one of the problems here is this sort of preoccupation with genitals, and it is double-sided. Because on the one hand, it's that they are taboo. And there's something not okay about genitalia, and there's something not okay about sex. And then on the other hand, it's that idea of minimalizing an entire individual's identity down to the genitalia. And, you know, I'm wondering if you specifically wanted to bait me with this because of my trans agenda. but the fact of the matter is that we live in a world, and it's not just transgender people, but definitely intersex conditions and all of this, and it's surprisingly common. But the fact of the matter is that not all women have vaginas, not all men have penises, and a woman is not her vagina. She is so much more than that. But, I mean, you see it. You hear it in the clubs on the street. You know, I'm going to go and chase some pussy or something. People say that.
Absolutely.
I never say that. People say that. Just that.
Oh, you...
Shh, Johnty! Quiet!
Sorry,
yeah, but
it's
that's
true.
That's exactly the thing. I'm going to get me some pussy. And, all right, I'm a little bit sexist myself, so yes, maybe it's predominantly men, and reverse sexism doesn't exist, but we can talk about that another time. It's a different concept. So I'm being prejudiced, but I'm not being sexist. And really, it ties into that idea of ownership. It's that entitlement to someone else's body part, to the vagina. Mm-hmm. I am entitled to it. And it's not even about, mm-hmm, I'm going to go and have an emotional connection with someone and make love and foreplay, mm-hmm, and whatever it is. It's I'm going to get some pussy that I am, yeah, entitled to. And that's really a problem, because it makes that very transactional. It's now a commodity. The woman's body, mm, is a commodity, and she doesn't have agency over it. Mm.
But that's so much of what we've come to.
Well, that's, mm, exactly the problem. So, and I mean, I identify as demisexual, and you'll understand that's, mm-hmm, somewhere on the asexual spectrum, but I'm very sex positive. Mm. Sex is part of the human condition. It exists. It's something that we have to talk about, and something that we have to not be ashamed of. And we are entitled to our own sexuality. That's not something that has,
yeah,
to be earned.
Whatever the expression of that may be.
Well, absolutely, mm, right. And part of that extends, mm, to ownership over your own body. Mm. I really think you can't get away from that idea.
No, you can't. But we need to put it in the context. And we need to we need to move from the separation of, mm, genitals and body into the whole.
Well, that's exactly the thing, because you don't have sex. Okay, you have sex with your genitals, but sex
but
is so much
love
more than
with
that.
The rest of you. So
well,
there's
you
a
can.
Big distinction between having sex and making love.
Absolutely right, and I believe in that, but I know that there are some who don't like the terminology making, yeah, love as opposed to having sex and whatever it is, but the entire body is a sexual organ. That's really,
yes,
the point, mm, that I'm trying to make. It's not something that necessarily happens with the genitals, and it becomes a big issue for a lot of couples, because sometimes what we would consider traditional intercourse isn't possible. And I mean, Lisa, maybe you can identify with a little bit of what I'm saying here, but I mean, people say to a lesbian couple, well, how do you have sex? Mm-hmm. Sex is more than penetration.
Well, that's one thing, and the other thing is people often ask lesbians, well, if you use toy, why don't you just have sex with a man? Mm. It's the same thing,
yeah,
and it's exactly what you're saying.
We spoke about this,
yes,
a while
we spoke
ago.
About this,
that, you know, we asked the question: do lesbians, yeah, enjoy penetration? Mm. Which is like the most stupid question on the face
it's
of this earth.
Absolutely ridiculous.
It's like: do Jews do this? Do black people do this? Do, yeah, white people? It's, you know, yeah, it's.
But the reality is that's how we are conditioned. It, yeah, is, and I mean, I've had to deal with a lot of stupid questions. Mm. As have you, and I mean, we technically speaking form a part of the same community, and I say, mm, that in air quotes, because you know, you kind of put the straight people in one corner and everybody that's not straight in another corner, and the reality is we almost have nothing in common.
So you like
because
just
we're complete
judge all us straight people.
No, all straight people judge all us not straight people, and it's, mm, like I what I love about our shows and about some of the gay shows that I've done is I've learned so much about drag queens and about transgender people, and it makes me feel closer to the cause, and that's why I'm so passionate about it. Yeah. Because, you know, there is this kind of like rift between you're transgender, you're gay, you're a lesbian, and we don't come together, we don't stand together and say, you know what, let's all fight together for one right, and you have gay pride, but that's more about having a piss-up party than anything,
yeah,
else.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it's true. It's
well, look,
not
I'm doing my part for LGBTQIA. I'm collecting the letters. At the moment, I've got 3. I've got L, I've got T, I've got A. So I'm definitely trying to unite everyone by
am
having all
L?
Of those identities. No, I'm the L.
Oh, you're L, okay.
Yeah, just because I'm demisexual doesn't mean that I can't identify as lesbian. The reason I used your experiences, uh-uh, is because there's a whole other batch of misconceptions, mm-mm-mm, when it comes to my body. But really what I think we need to get back to, mm, is if you're going to fixate on the genitalia and examine the concept of vagina, what is the purpose of a vagina? And it is not to be penetrated by a penis. Mm. It is an organ of sexual pleasure that belongs to an individual who has ownership over it. You don't need to validate your vagina, mm, through penetration. And I think that's part of the idea and that really unhealthy, mm, concept of surrendering or having your agency of your own body, mm-hmm, taken away from you.
And that's what's been, yep, happening. And
that's so true.
So we get a very interesting question. How is it not sex without penetration? Ha. So, let's look at the spectrum here. So for me, one of the most important aspects is the idea of sensuality as opposed to sex. So sensuality is very often includes the whole body, including but not necessarily focusing on genitals. All of our senses, sight, sound, taste, touch, smell. But for me, one of the most important distinctions is that sensuality is very often about intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
Sensuality has the heart connection. Sex often does not. So in our society, we've come to define sex as a very narrow experience, a very narrow act. And essentially, we've come to define that as a goal-oriented genital experience. The goal being?
I know this one. Just hold on.
Okay, you sold many DVDs on that.
It begins with an O. Orgasm. That's right. So
you sold expanded orgasm, but I mean, you know.
Yes.
Okay. So I sold a lot of body butter as well.
So essentially, we've come to say sex is when you and I are in bed, we are, well, wherever it is that we might be. You have an orgasm, I have an orgasm, and we deem the whole thing to be complete, finished, game over. Yeah. And my joke is for men it should be called going, not coming, because after that, guys are out of there and just want to go to sleep. Yeah. And that's what it is.
Yeah. You know, I think it's such an incredible, powerful message as that as well. And you know, something that I spoke to someone about yesterday is a friend mentioned to me that one of her best friends broke up with her girlfriend and they were together for 17 years and then she just turned straight. And she said to me, Lisa, how does that happen? How are you a lesbian for 17 years and then all of a sudden you just turn straight? And here's my answer. And I don't think I knew this for a very long time until I learned more about sensuality and about actually loving and connecting with a person. And the thing is that it's so true what you said. Sex is not about the genitals. It's about the connection and the emotional connection. And I very, very honestly choose God as I sit here as Lisa the lesbian can say that I can never say that I will not have sex with a man. And the reason I'm saying that is because my emotional connection to women has just always been so strong. The woman, her physique, the way she looks, the way she smells and touches and the way I touch her, it's just, I've always been attracted to that and that's what I've loved. But it doesn't mean I can never feel that with a man.
No.
And that is why what you just said about the genitals is just absolutely so important.
So I've had the opposite in my practice lately of so many women who have reached a certain age, which is generally kind of about 35, 40, sometimes a little bit more. And all of a sudden, they've gone and started relationships with other women. And this happened to a friend of a client that I saw yesterday. And she asked, why does this happen? And I said, there's a couple of interesting things. And the first one is that very often, it's not about the genitals of the person. It's about the person. And sometimes we get to a certain point where I can love somebody and their physical being is secondary to the soul, to the spirit, to the heart, to everything else.
That's so true.
And that's often what it is.
Hearts, not parts.
Yeah.
Hearts, not parts. Yeah. There we go. We should start a campaign. So hearts, not
parts. Sometimes it's something that has always been inside of us and now is a loud expression because we've allowed ourselves to kind of go past the barriers, the inhibitions, the judgment of what that would actually mean. But it also means that the way that we live our lives does not need to be just one narrow little path. The fact that in our world, more people have more jobs than they've ever had before. So in the past, for example, you'd have one job with one company for 50 odd years, and that's what you would do. Now, people work here, they work there, they go into all different kinds of fields, and it becomes this amazing exploration. Why our emotional space, our sensual space, our sexual space, why does that have to be the same? Why do we want to limit that?
Well, there's this rigidity that's associated with your sexuality. And I mean, again, it comes down to this idea that there is normal and there is abnormal. And the concept is flawed. It's flawed thinking.
Absolutely.
You know, the example that I always use, John T, do you identify as straight?
No.
All right. Misha, do you identify as straight?
I do, yeah.
All right. So we can role play a little bit, but, you know, when did you know that you were straight?
Sorry, John T and I are being very naughty. Yeah. Okay. You two go. John T, we'll have our own little conversation.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay.
I don't think I ever identified myself as.
Did your parents accept you?
Yeah, my parents
accepted. Was it difficult to come out to them?
Not at all.
How do you have sex? I mean, these are all of what I'm doing. I'm illustrating this idea that no one asks you these questions. But I mean, as soon as you're queer, as soon as you're gay, it's when did you know? How old were you?
Yeah.
How can you be sure? How do you know if you haven't, Lisa, if you haven't slept with a man, how can you know that you're a lesbian? Well, okay, if a dude hasn't slept with another dude, how can he know that he's straight? It's exactly the same thing. But it's that flawed thinking that it is normal to be heterosexual and by extension, if you're not heterosexual, then it must be abnormal. And these are concepts that have their roots in ancient times. We thought that way for hundreds and hundreds of years. But there is evidence that it wasn't always that way.
But the funny thing is that from Greek mythology, like all women were sleeping with women and men were sleeping with men.
Why I'm saying there's evidence that it wasn't always like that. And it has to be this kind of societal or social construct to say that these behaviors are normal and other behaviors are not normal. And inherently, if they aren't normal, they must be inferior. They must be worse. Mm. And that's unhealthy thinking. And that's why it's not necessarily, I dream of a day when everyone views their sexuality as being completely fluid. And maybe we'll get that.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, talking about what's normal and what's abnormal, just a little bit of history. Growing up, my parents were very, giving to all my...
I was listening.
It's not what you think. But basically, something like that. I was obsessed with animals. So my father went and built me an aviary, and I got a whole bunch of birds. And I had these cute little quails, and they were adorable. And stupidly enough, I only got the 2 males and the 4 females because I thought they'll reproduce. The males happened to be gay, so they all died out. And it was, nature right there. No one told them they had to be that. No one... said, okay, now this, and they actually, the females laid a nest of eggs, and the males, took it over without fertilizing the eggs, and that's how they, died out.
That's so funny that you're saying that, because one argument we always have, and tell me you haven't heard this, is it's not natural or normal to be gay because you don't see it in nature. I'm like, God, really, do you read?
Yeah.
Do you actually know what happens in nature?
At least, 450 species of animal. And, definitely it's been documented, especially a lot of people out there might know that I'm a bit of a penguinaholic. I have a thing for penguins.
So cute.
And they are one of the species in which homosexual relations have been very well documented. Yep. And a same-sex couple will adopt an orphaned penguin chick that belonged to a heterosexual couple and raise it.
But go back to simple sensuality in the animal kingdom with grooming, with nurturing, with every animal nurtures and nourishes and grooms every other animal, regardless of anything else, which kind of just brought a little interesting thing to mind, because I went somewhere really nice for supper a little while ago, and we ate this really delicious quail. Was the quail gay or straight?
Would it have changed the way that it tasted? That's the question.
Would it have been different? It was absolutely delicious. Whether the quail was gay, straight, monogamous, a swinger, into bondage, I think the quail was still fucking delicious.
I was expecting this very serious story from you now, and then you're like, I ate this quail. And
okay, so.
Oh, no.
Feminal. We were all on the right track. Feminal is anal sex with a woman.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well done, ladies.
Nailed it. Give me a high five.
High five, the sun.
That's impressive. Very, very good.
Sure.
Yes. So.
This has been fun.
It has been. We will definitely.
Mishka looks a little bit shocked.
A little bit, yeah.
You are? Okay.
Was bad. Did Mishka, yeah.
Well,
are you going to come back? That's the most important question.
Well, I had fun, so I guess I'll have to.
So tell us what happens after you speak to mom tonight, okay?
I'm actually not seeing her tonight. Like I said, I've got a girls'
night.
Oh, yeah,
it's girls' night with Lisa invited. Can I
come? Oh, yes. Cool. You need to send me
the details. You got to bring your own pillows, because we're definitely going to be pillow fighting.
Oh, darling. Oh.
Yeah.
I'll bring two.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
so everybody is now wanting periscopes of your girls' night.
Okay, we can do that.
Yes. So it has been really cool. Next,
we've got you tongue-tied today, John.
can I just ask something?
You can, if you do it quickly.
And it's very quick.
Yes, I will.
No,
sorry.
That's not what I was asking. Okay. Lisa asked me, to maybe think of a joke or something, and that got me thinking to the very first joke, and incidentally, the very first joke I ever heard in my life. So picture 3-year-old little me, and my parents were telling a joke, and I still don't get it. But basically what happens is, what did Adam say to Eve the first time they were about to have sex? Go stand over there. I don't know how long it gets. And I can you explain something?
No? John T, should we have another show about this?
Yeah, I think in two weeks' time we're talking about sex education. So
awesome.
I would love you to come back for that.
Please. I'm very passionate about the idea of sex education.
2 weeks' time. So very cool. Come back in 2 weeks' time and I promise I will answer that for you. How's
Thank
that?
You.
Okay, that's very cool.
Yeah, we had a couple of features planned for today, but
yeah, we just got
time
a little bit
got away from us.
So that's cool.
Yeah, Misha, you and I are like sloppy seconds. They got us to fall in when it's like, I don't have a day tonight. Can
tomorrow?
You?
Like, what?
Yeah. It's okay. We know where we stand.
Yeah, but by the same token, let's accept a little bit of responsibility for saying yes to the invitation.
I have high standards. I never claimed that.
You see, the thing about Jont is he can turn any situation, okay? I love you, Jont.
I love you too, and I'm so glad that you're here. And I'm so glad that you're feeling better.
Oh, thank you.
So, we have some really cool workshops next week. I have no idea what they are, but please go to www.eroslife.co.za. The information is there, and we will put the workshop information up on our page. What I did say that I was going to share a really beautiful healing technique with everybody this week, and it is on our page. If not yet, it will be very soon after the show. John, I will put it up. It's a really beautiful acknowledgement of your body. Very beautiful healing process that is up on our page on the website, Cliff Central website. This has been really fascinating. Misha, thank you so much. You're more than welcome to come back again.
Why, thank you.
So in 2 weeks' time, we will answer your questions, so make sure that you're here.
I'll definitely be here bright and early. Cool. Okay, maybe not that early.
Well, you can be here as early as you like. If you're here early enough, you'll get donuts or muffins.
Oh, okay.
So
I don't really eat those.
Well, there's other things you can do with donuts.
Yeah, my mind just...
no idea what that could possibly be.
Don't laugh. Gareth and I once filmed a whole anal massage lesson on a donut.
I need to see that.
Wait, unfortunately, it got lost, so we have to do it again.
I think
the donut or the video?
Somebody ate the donut. The video disappeared. There was the end of that.
We're doing another segment of that video live on Periscope next week.
So we will do that. That's very cool. Thank you. This has been really awesome. We wish you all so much pleasure. Have a wonderful week. Next up is Casper and the team doing I don't know what, because there's all sorts of interesting looking people out there who are looking at us with some great fascination. Thank you again for your questions, your emails during the week. I really love them. Some cool questions up in Q&A on our website. So please join us next week, and we are going to play out with, I have no idea, Private Show, Clean, what is that? Any idea? Let's find out.
This is CliffCentral.com.